guidelines for enforcing a limited travel ban went into effect last night following the Supreme Court's decision this week to allow portions of that ban to become operative. Meanwhile, a vote on the Senate health care bill was delayed this week, though President Trump is saying we might have a surprise in store when it comes to a GOP health care bill to repeal and replace Obamacare. And the state budget process continues. We will talk about these headlines and more during this edition of The Week in Review. But we will start with the ongoing war between President Trump and the media. That intensified big time this week with more charges of fake news about Russia, CNN reporters resigning over a story, and President Trump's personal attack against an MSNBC anchor. How appropriate was it for the president to tweet out a personal insult to Mika Brzezinski? We will talk about that. We will welcome your thoughts on these stories and other top stories in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show if you want to participate in the topics we're talking about or if you'd like to introduce a topic. We welcome that as well. Let me welcome our guest. Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Joy.
And Louis Fortas is with us, and he is the editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Good morning, Louis.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Owen.
All right.
Good morning.
Let us start with President Trump this week lashed out at both of the hosts of MSNBC's Morning Joe in tweets. He called Mika Brzezinski low IQ crazy Mika and claimed she had a facelift late last year. Trump also called Joe Scarborough psycho Joe. Trump's comments drew immediate condemnation from members of both political parties, some calling his jabs beneath the dignity of his office. Speaker Paul Ryan joined in those weighing in. Here's Paul Ryan and what he had to say when asked if he thought this was appropriate or not.
Obviously, I don't see that as an appropriate comment. I think, look, what we're trying to do around here is improve the tone and the civility of the debate, and this obviously doesn't help do that.
Owen, is that right?
It is right. I mean, Trump's tweets regarding Mika and those they're utterly indefensible, and I'm not going to sit here and defend them, and nor should Speaker Ryan. They are what's disappointing about it in a couple of areas. One, just personally, it's disgusting behavior. This is things that you would chastise your teenager for tweeting something like that about a schoolmate. It's ridiculous behavior. But it also hurts him from a political and policy standpoint, where here you have the president of the United States who is punching down, if you will, against people who shouldn't matter in his scope. He should be focused on the big issues that are important to the country and working on policy issues and all that stuff. And here he is obsessed about an MSNBC host who has almost no ratings. I don't know why he's even bothering, but again, it's just disgusting behavior, and I wish he would stop, and he's clearly not going to.
Now, apparently, Mika and Joe, take jabs at President Trump from time to time. Does that justify in any way, Louis, Trump's tweeting that she was bleeding from her facelift?
First of all, I want to start this conversation by agreeing with Owen. We'll have plenty of time to disagree, but I think I totally agree with everything he had said. You have a different situation here. You can always punch up, as you use Owen's thing about punching down. The press, part of their job is to keep elected officials, alert and accountable and all. And I was as an elected official, and if the press wanted to beat up on you, I mean, you tried to, you know, argue your case, and you tried to point out how they were wrong, but you didn't get into, you know, schoolyard name-calling, I think. Owen, I think, said it very well. I mean, it's childish.
Yeah, here is White House Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders defending President Trump yesterday and his tweets slamming Morning Joe. Let's take a listen to the White House defense.
And I think that the president has been attacked mercilessly on personal accounts by members on that program. And I think he's been very clear that when he gets attacked, he's going to hit back. I think the American people elected somebody who's tough, who's smart, and who's a fighter. And that's Donald Trump. And I don't think that it's a surprise to anybody that he fights fire with fire.
So he fights back if he's attacked, Owen.
Well, sadly, she's right in from the standpoint that it's not a surprise, but that doesn't make it right. And to Lewis's point, and we're going to find ourselves agreeing a lot on this point, I think, but, you know, as the President of the United States, he gets criticism, both justified and unjustified, from literally millions of avenues through multiple channels, through media and social media and foreign press and whatever. I would rather him spend his time working on the issues important to America than fighting back against anybody who dares to criticize him. I think it illustrates what we knew about Trump all along. He has a fragile, fragile ego and feels a need to defend it against all comers.
Yet, Lewis, is this latest tweet where he attacks somebody inappropriately, that many are saying inappropriately attacks somebody, is this going to hurt him with his base, though?
I think it's beginning to hurt him in a large way with the independents. And I think his base will still tolerate quite a bit from him. But I think the critical part for him are the independents, and he won the independents, I think, by about 4% in the election. And that's the group that is beginning to move away from him, and that's why his numbers don't move. His numbers are basically his base. And so I don't think it'll hurt him with the base. I think it is hurting him. But I think the situation, and I tell this to people when they get, you know, more powerful in positions or run for political office or whatever, is be careful how high you fly, or at least don't try to appear like you're flying too high, because once you start flying higher, people start shooting at you. And I don't care whether it's in business, whether it's in politics, whether it's in athletics, whether it's in show business. Once you begin to start, again, flying a little higher, you become a target. So, I mean, that's if you wanna go to work, come home, and do nothing else than watch TV or something, nobody's gonna be attacking you. But if you're gonna get out there and try to do something, you're gonna get attacked, and that's what it's all about.
If I could just dovetail into one of Lewis's comments there regarding losing independents, I agree with that, and I think you've seen some polls regarding that showing that independents are severely critical of Trump's behavior in this regard. But I think another place where it hurts him is with, I'll call them reluctant conservatives, and they're people I'm certainly familiar with. I consider myself a sector of that, but people who did not support Trump during the election or reluctantly voted for him at the last minute because of they didn't want Hillary Clinton or whatever, but that conservative portion of the Republican base that I think has been largely supportive of so far Trump's policy action so far. Many of his policies, his Supreme Court pick, a lot of those things from a conservative perspective have been very positive. And yet here you have this behavior on the side that makes it it makes it very difficult for folks like me to give him a full-throated defense in other items when he's just a disgusting human being in other aspects.
In an opinion piece this morning in the Washington Post, the Morning Joe co-hosts, Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough, shared their side of the story, and they weighed in on the president's treatment of women, among other points. They said in the piece, which was, by the way, titled, Donald Trump is Not Well, they said that they were heartened to hear a number of Republican lawmakers call out the president on these tweets, and they hope that the women close to the president will do the same. So, Owen, is there a way to get President Trump to stop tweeting things like this, especially things like the way women look?
Clearly not. You have a man who's in his 70s who has been this way for the better part of his lifespan. I seriously doubt that anybody could influence or change his mind at this time.
Lewis?
Well, they were hoping he was going to change if he got the nomination. Then they were hoping he was going to change when he got elected. And then they were hoping he would change as he kind of, you know, matured a little into the office. So I agree with Owen again. It doesn't look too promising for those who are looking for change from him.
We are talking with Lewis Fortas and Owen Robinson during this edition of The Week in Review. We are talking right now about President Trump's personal attack against MSNBC anchors Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough. And we're wondering what you think about this latest round in the war between President Trump and the media in particular. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. Our guests today are Owen Robinson and Lewis Fortas. Our number, if you'd like to join in, is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Deputy White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders blasted the media on Tuesday for the coverage of what she called the Trump-Russia hoax, prompting a tangle with a reporter who asked Trump's White House to stop inflaming the press corps and the public against the press corps. Sanders told reporters during the White House briefing that the constant barrage of fake news directed at President Trump has garnered a lot of frustration. Let's listen to a clip of that interaction.
Come on. You're inflaming everybody right here, right now with those words. This administration has done that as well. Why in the name of heavens? Any one of us, right, are replaceable. And any one of us, if we don't get it right, the audience has the opportunity to turn the channel or not read us.
You have
been elected to serve for 4 years at least. There's no option other than that. We're here to ask you questions.
Right.
We're here to provide the answers. And what you just did is inflammatory to people all over the country who look at it and say, see, once again, the president's right and everybody else out here is fake media. And everybody in this room is only trying to do their job.
Well, I disagree completely. First of all, I think if anything has been inflamed, it's the dishonesty that often takes place by the news media. And I think it is outrageous for you to accuse me of inflaming a story when I was simply trying to respond to his question.
All right. Lewis Fortas, as editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, what do you make of this intensifying war between the White House and the press corps and the constant claims of fake news? Apparently, all the stories about the Russia and the investigation are, you know, that's all fake news.
Well, I think that the press has kind of learned to live with Sean Spicer, and I think they appreciate the fact that he saw himself in a very tough situation, and I think it was the first day where he had to defend the huge turnout for the inauguration, which didn't exist, but he danced around enough, and he tried to, I think, be a more reasonable person. The Sarah Huckabee, I don't know where they found her, but she is really an aggressive person who, what we were talking about earlier, I think her aggressiveness just fans the flames and encourages the base. So I think that 30% really like hearing what she has to say. I think it's, you know, her aggressiveness over things that pretty clearly are reasonable to be criticizing, especially the Russian situation, when all of our intelligence agencies are concluding independently that, you know, Russia interfered, and they interfered in our election trying to help Donald Trump. And she's, you know, this is dishonesty and all of that. I think this is what's pushing independence away from Donald Trump. I don't think she's doing him any favors, and I think it's supporting that base. But that base is there. Donald Trump said, you know, I could stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and my base is still going to stay with me. And I think he was right. But it's the independents, and these are the ones that, you know, are smart enough to realize that there is some serious stuff going on with this Russia investigation, and for her to be standing up there saying it's all a lie and you guys are all liars and it's all fake news, it just doesn't fly. So I don't think she's doing him any favors.
So Owen, as a, you know, columnist and a blogger, whose side are you on in this debate?
Well, and you know, there's a couple aspects of this. I think when you talk about the relationship between the Trump administration and the media, I think what you're seeing is unlike what we saw under the Obama administration, where you clearly had a cozy relationship where that press corps, they liked each other. They hang out in the same circles. They enjoy each other's company. They liked the press secretary and the president, the insiders. And it was a very, I'll call it a collegial relationship most of the time. These are people who clearly do not like each other, and I think that it's personal. I think you could hear it in the tone and in the statements of that reporter that he's taking it as a personal offense, the accusations of fake news and whatever, and is unable to separate it from what I think the Trump administration is trying to do, which is to deflect and to create to create some spin around that story. So I think there is a lot of truth in the fact that Russia was trying to meddle in our election last summer and fall. I think the evidence is starting to line up pretty clearly that that was happening. I have yet to see any real evidence that the Trump administration or the Trump campaign at that time was colluding with Russia. That's an entirely separate accusation. But the fact is I think Russia was trying to meddle, and I think that the Obama administration sat on its haunches and didn't do anything because they thought Clinton was going to win. I think all those are legitimate stories to talk about, and the press should be covering them. It should be talking about them because the American people have a right to know. But I also think you have to put a story like that in the context of world affairs, where while we are offended that Russia would be trying to meddle in our election, it's certainly not unprecedented in world affairs for foreign governments to meddle in other elections. In fact, as recently as last year, the Obama administration was meddling in the Israeli election against Prime Minister Netanyahu. So it's not uncommon. It's something we should react to. And I think as Americans, we certainly do not want a foreign nation trying to influence our elections. We need to get to the bottom of that. We need to take action or reaction against it for whatever we can do. But let's talk about it in a real sense, and instead of in this media uproar that seems to be happening every day in the media briefing room.
Well, to add fuel to the fire, three journalists at CNN resigned on Monday after the cable news network was forced to retract and apologize for a story on its website involving a close ally of President Trump's. The article linked a hedge fund manager and a Trump confidant to a Russian investment fund supposedly being investigated by the Senate. That story was removed from CNN.com late last week after the network decided it was not, it could not fully stand by its reporting. The president weighed in, tweeting, quote, "Wow, CNN had to retract a big story on Russia with three employees forced to resign." What about then he also wrote, what about all the other phony stories they do? Fake news. So that doesn't help the media's case, does it, Owen?
Well, and it's a perfect case in point where there is some legitimacy to this story, as I said, where the media should be digging into it. CNN in particular is not doing the media any favors because they have been full bore on anything that says Russia in it. They've been putting on their website, and I read CNN every day. It's one of my go-to sites, and there has been a Russia headline on that main page for the last, I don't know, 6 months. Except for today, interestingly enough. There's not one there right now. And I think that's an indication that they've got their hand burned and they're backing off. So I think, you know, as it does fuel the fire for the Trump administration to jump on the media and really discredits much of the other media, who I think a lot of it is trying to do legitimate work.
Lewis?
Yeah, I think no one likes to make a mistake, and I don't know how much of a mistake it is, whether it's they can't just justify it right now or if it's something that was just, you know, an overreach. I don't know. And, you know, perhaps when this whole investigation moves forward, the Mueller's investigation, we'll find out more. So, but right now, it's, you know, CNN took it back, CNN made a mistake. But I think the bigger issue is this whole kind of new environment that the press finds itself in especially the White House press. And that is, I mean, if you believe in science, you're an ultra-liberal or something. That the whole dynamic has changed. And I agree. Some think MSNBC is a liberal network, and I think Fox News is a conservative network. And I've always viewed CNN as pretty middle of the road. Yeah, they're jumping on this Russia thing, but this Russia thing is serious. I mean, when you have a major adversary of ours interfering in our elections in a pretty sophisticated way, that's a serious problem. And we better be investigating this, and we better, you know, find out everything we can about this and get this out into the public arena as much as we can, and hopefully we can do something about it. But so I just think that they got too enthusiastic. They made a mistake. They retracted it, and Trump is jumping all over it and taking advantage of it and embellishing it. I mean, and that's basically it.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review. We are talking with Lewis Fortas and Owen Robinson this week, and we welcome your input, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones, and Kara in Elkhorn is with us first. Hi, Kara.
Hi. I just wanted to say that from somebody that's been watching the media for 20 years and very involved in politics, I have watched CNN not be the middle of the road anymore. Them, ABC, CBS, and NBC have taken a left turn, and they cover up things for Democrats. They downplay everything. Why wasn't the media investigating the Russian allegations over Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch? And why didn't they go after Hillary Clinton? And why was she never brought up on charges? Because the left-winged media did not want to do anything, and they wanted to cover for Barack Obama like they did for 8 years. It is disgusting that I have to sit here and let my children learn nothing about what's really going on in politics because people like your guest want to keep saying that President Trump colluded with the Russians. There is nothing there. We know there's nothing there. Yes, they were colluding. The Russians were trying to do stuff with our elections like they had with how many different states and nations, but it had nothing to do with who was winning. Everyone thought Hillary Clinton was winning, but what you didn't realize is there are alternative medias now, like Twitter, that we know where to get the real news to and to figure out what's going on. So when I see all the fake stuff going on and you guys keep going on and on and on and bashing Trump and calling Mika and Joe, calling him crazy almost every single day, yes, he's stupid going on Twitter and he's an old man and my dad would have done the same thing. But why are we going to let say it's not the same as these people going on national TV telling people that our president is ill and mentally ill? It is disgusting the barrage that they're doing on him. And I'm done. I just had to say that because if there's no honesty between any of the news media anymore.
All right. Well, Owen, what's your response to that? You know, Joe and Mika call the president crazy on their show, and That's over the line, too, and the president should defend himself.
Well, I think Kara brings up a lot of good points from the standpoint that we have seen a pretty concerted effort from many members of what I'll call the mainstream media, who are, as I mentioned at the beginning, they're very, I'll be kind and call it very forgiving towards the Obama administration and towards other leftist organizations that they get away with a lot, and they don't go after it with the kind of investigatory fervor that they're going after some of these other items, and specifically with an organization like CNN, where Project Veritas has the video of one of their producers saying that, essentially admitting it, saying they were pushing this Russia Trump story because it was giving them good ratings and they didn't care if it was true or not. And I think a lot of that does go on in the media, and the fact that we are seeing a shifting media landscape, and really it's been something going on for the last 15 years, a shifting media landscape where some of these big media outlets can no longer control the dialogue and control the message like they had in the past. And a lot of people are seeking out alternative news sources because they're frustrated that the ones who claim to be the arbiters of truth are no longer being fair arbiters of that truth.
Let's get to Shakur in Milwaukee on next. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What do you have to say?
Oh, I would like to say about the media. Everybody is using the media. And the media is never lies, but the people put whatever they feel it. Like, and from especially people looking and about a media, it's a fake and all that, but they don't see that he is especially attacking the media. And I don't know why people are not or on the rule, or I don't know why they're saying media, everybody, media. So he's especially attacking the media. They don't look there, he's attacking, but they just look the media.
All right, so Shakur thinks that everybody just thinks the media are attacking President Trump. They're not really looking at President Trump attacking the media. Do you think that's true, Lewis?
I think that if you look at the social science research, it's very interesting that each side always feels the other one is getting a better deal, is being treated better, and they're the ones being attacked. And it goes all the way down to children. If you talk to siblings, and they'll say, "Oh, parents treat the other one better, and I have it harder." And there's this. And there's a lot of research out there that confirms this, that each side always feels kind of like the wind is blowing in their face and the other ones have the wind at their back. And I think right now there is, a tremendous tension between the media. But I think Donald Trump has survived and got elected and everything by just generating anger, hatred. When you start out in your declaration attacking, Mexicans for being rapists and all, I mean, my God, you go overseas. I was just abroad last month, and people just look at me and they say, what is going on in your country? I mean, this is America. What are you doing? And you just say, well, it's an aberration. This will pass. But this idea that Obama skated and Clinton skated. Take a look at Clinton's administration. He was attacked for Whitewater, which there was absolutely nothing there. Hillary was attacked for her pork belly investment. There was nothing there. What did they end up getting him on? Having an affair with an intern, which was absolutely indefensible, and dancing around that issue. I mean, that's the best they could get. But 6 or 7 years of his administration were under investigation. So for the other side to be saying, the Democrats have stated, well, that's not the case. Clinton talking to Loretta Lynch when he did. She used to work for him. He took that opportunity to, you know, to basically say, hello, the guy's a gregarious guy. Was it illegal? Was there anything corrupt there? No. Was it stupid? Yes. Was it something that you know, that the other side could twist up one side and down the other? Absolutely. And they did. But there was nothing, you know, there was nothing illegal about that. Hillary's emails, that was stupid. But the previous Secretary of State, Colin Powell, did the same thing. Yeah. So, you know, it isn't like, you know, one side. And Obama was just a pretty stand-up guy and a pretty transparent guy. And, you know, there wasn't, he lived a very, you know, honorable, kind of transparent life. Trump came in fighting. Trump came in wanting this. I mean, and when they get closer to him on the Russia thing, he picks another fight to distract people. He knows how to control the media. He knows how to play his base. And he does it, you know, in a very, very clever way. But that's not a way to govern the most powerful country in the world.
Yeah, let me jump in because we do have to move on to some other issues if we're going to cover more during this edition of the Week in Review. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the Trump travel ban could go into effect, or at least portions of it could go into effect for 90 days. It will hear the case. It will hear the case in the fall. The ruling allows people with close family relationships or with a connection to a business or a school to enter the country, but those that don't have that connection cannot. The definition of close family includes parents, a spouse, children, an adult son or daughter, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, or sibling, as well as step-family relationships. However, it explicitly excluded other family relationships, such as grandparents. Shortly before the ban took effect last night, the state of Hawaii asked a federal court to clarify the scope of the ruling, saying, quote, that the federal government may not enforce the controversial bans against grandparents, grandchildren, brothers-in-laws, sister-in-laws, and aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins of people currently living in the United States. So, that's a mouthful, but there's fights now over this partial implementation of the travel ban. Owen, what do you think?
Well, Ed, and you're right. This covers a lot of different territory. I think it's important, first of all, that the Supreme Court does get this case resolved quickly to reaffirm that it is the president's jurisdiction and within the realm of his power, both through the Constitution and federal law, to set these kinds of barriers or rules regarding our immigration policy. And that's true whether it's a Democrat or Republican, but that is an executive branch power that we need the courts to reaffirm so that we can discuss this not as a legal matter, but as a policy matter. And as a policy matter, I think there's a lot to debate there. And I guess I find myself wondering, this was set up originally as a temporary travel ban, as a stopgap measure while the State Department and immigration authorities created better vetting procedures for immigrants to be able to make sure that we're keeping out terrorists. Simple as that. Well, with all the legal challenges, all the time, it's supposed to be a 120-day ban. We're well past 120 days. That vetting process should be in place. I'm not sure why we need the ban anymore and why we didn't have those vetting policies put in place while this was being wrangled through the courts, and this is no longer necessary. So I think there's a serious question there. But I do think it's the president's right to do it. I think this travel ban, as it's designed, I think there's certainly some questionable issues with it and whether it'll be effective or whether it even matters, except for the people that it directly affects.
And Lewis, your thoughts on the travel ban taking effect, or at least part of it taking effect last night?
I think this is a minor victory for the president, and he is jumping all over that. And he is somebody who is trying to rack up some score because he has not had a major piece of legislation, land on his desk and that he was able to sign. He's done a number of executive orders, but he's not had a major piece of legislation, and he takes these small things as victories, like getting the health repeal and replace through just the House of Representatives by a vote or two. And so I think that Owen is right, that he has a right to, the president has a right to deal with immigration, but you have to do it in a constitutional manner. And if you're really worried about, you know, this curbing terrorism, then why didn't they add Saudi Arabia? Because that is the country where the folks from 9/11 came from. And so why aren't they on the list? These other countries, we have had nobody from these countries doing any, you know, coming to the United States and doing any damage to us. But we did from Saudi Arabia, and they're not on the list. So you look at this, and you realize that this is, again, you know, mostly for show, mostly to play, you know, to the anger and the bias and the prejudice of his base. So I think it's I think it is a small victory for him, but I think it's you know, pretty hollow victory.
When we come back from break, we're going to talk about the latest on health care in Washington and state of Wisconsin news, including the latest on the state budget, which should be done by tomorrow, but it's not going to be. And we will welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review, talking this week with Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, and Owen Robinson, a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Owen Robinson and Louis Fortas. Let's turn our attention to health care. It dominated the headlines this week with the delay of the vote in the U.S. Senate on its health care bill. Both moderate and conservatives in the Republican Party stepped back from the bill in the U.S. Senate. Senator Ron Johnson was among them and lobbied party leaders for days to delay the vote and give lawmakers and their constituents more time to understand and evaluate this proposal, which would cut taxes, reduce Medicaid coverage, and dismantled other key pieces of the Affordable Care Act. President Trump addressed the stalled health care bill during a meet and greet with the visiting World Series champion Chicago Cubs this week. Let's take a listen to what he had to say then.
Health care is working along very well. We could have a big surprise with a great health care package. So now they're happy.
What do you mean by big surprise, sir?
I think you're going to have a great, great surprise. It's going to be great.
Yeah, so what is this great, great surprise going to be, Louis?
It won't be. There is none. And the situation is that you have a bill that is really, really seriously flawed. And the House passed, and this was... Trump was saying on the campaign trail that he wanted to get rid of Obamacare and replace it with something that would provide health care for everyone at a lower price and higher quality. Well, this does none of those three. And the only way you're going to get anything close to what Trump wants would be to do a single payer, and that's not about to happen with this Republican administration. So this bill is going to knock off it. Currently, they're talking about 22 million people losing their coverage. And years ago, they kept talking about the term came up, putting lipstick on a pig. Well, this is exactly what you have here. This is a very, very flawed bill. This is a bill that Paul Ryan has been kind of fantasizing about for, you know, about a decade. And in order to try to make this, you know, try to pick up some votes, you have to make some changes that are going to offend one side or the other. You have the moderates on one side, and that side is growing. And then you have the ultra-conservatives on the other side, Ron Johnson in that group, that just does not, is saying it's not going far enough. So how do you kind of, you know, bring these two together and get you know, 50 votes? And I see it as almost impossible for McConnell to do that. You can buy off some voters, some of the senators, by saying, okay, I'm going to put in more money for your particular interest or whatever. But then you're going to offend the other side, and then you have to take it back to the House of Representatives, where that thing just barely passed with a lot of arm-twisting by Ryan. I don't see how this is going to happen. I think the biggest thing that they're concerned about is, in Obamacare, there was a huge tax increase, not a huge, it was a tax increase for the fraction of the 1%. It was a large, you know, tax increase for a fraction of 1% of the top 1%. And that's what they're trying to repeal. And if you do that, you lose a lot of money, and you don't know, and then you start cutting benefits for poor people and disabled people and elderly people. This is a mess. And I don't see how they are going to be able to do much of anything with this.
What do you think they can do much of anything, Owen?
Well, it's always fun to watch the sausage be made, isn't it? So we have, as Lewis said, lots of conflicting things, lots of storylines, lots of things going on. I think in the grand big picture, I think where, as a conservative, where I'm disappointed is we have clearly seeded the debate that the federal government should control health care in America. And we are now bickering over the details of what that control should look like and how deep it should be and what levers our federal government should be pulling and knobs they should be turning to affect the health care of all of us. But we've seeded the grand debate, and I think that's the greatest disappointment of this entire fiasco.
Yeah. In the state of Wisconsin, there was a new poll by Marquette University Law School. The number of Wisconsin voters who want to keep and improve the Affordable Care Act was twice as high as the number of people who want Obamacare repealed and replaced. Any reaction to that, Owen?
Well, I think that just proves the point I was just making, that and this was, I think, the plan all along. You get it in place, you get something in there to put the debate into Congress instead of instead of our communities, instead of our direct relationships with our healthcare providers. So now, instead of having a distributed economic system where we're trying to create the best allocation of resources for healthcare through a free market system, we are working through government policy to try to affect the best outcomes.
Yeah. We need to turn to the state budget news. Leading Republicans met with Governor Scott Walker on Wednesday morning to hash out differences on transportation and K-12 education and taxes. The meeting came after a high-profile spat on Tuesday between Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald over road funding. Now the latest is that Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said the possibility of collecting a new fee on heavy trucks is on the table. This emerged on Wednesday in his budget talks with Governor Scott Walker and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And John in Madison has been waiting with a comment on this. So let's hear what John has to say and get our guest to respond. Hi, John.
Good morning, everybody. I strongly support this fee. As an engineer, we've known since the 1950s that trucks have a disproportionate impact on roads. And in fact, one highway engineer calculated that a single semi-truck imposes 60,000 times the amount of impact as an automobile on the trucks. For the Wisconsin Motor Carriers Association and the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, saying that this cost will be passed on to consumers is exactly what we want. Otherwise, what's happening is that other motorists are subsidizing the big trucks. So I strongly support this measure.
Yeah, I know. Speaking to reporters yesterday, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says his GOP caucus is generally supportive of the idea of putting a per-mile fee on the kinds of heavy trucks that, in general, do more damage to roads. So, has this broken the impasse? Is this what's going to happen now for transportation funding, a higher fee on large trucks? Lewis first.
It may be. The problem that you have is you can't keep borrowing money for transportation and not actually raising taxes to pay for it. You can't keep pushing it on to future generations. And too many people, including the governor, have made this pledge that they will not raise taxes. Well, you know, you have inflation, you have other rising costs. You do have to be responsible. You have to be an adult, and you have to bite the bullet sometimes and make hard decisions. You can't keep just borrowing the money and spending away and not, you know, taking responsibility. Robin Voss, to his credit, the Speaker of the Assembly, has been the adult in this room. I mean, the Republicans control both houses and the governor's office. There are no Democrats involved in this debate. This is purely among the Republicans, and they cannot come to an agreement. And Voss is the one saying you can't keep borrowing. And now they're dancing around. And if this truck, and the trucks do a lot of damage, there's no question about it. And if this can solve the problem, wonderful. But, I mean, we have to do something other than continue to borrow money for the transportation. We have to be doing some kind of taxation. If you want to do it this kind of, you know, go after the trucks that are causing a lot of the damage, fine. It makes sense. Just do something responsible.
Mm-hmm. Owen?
Well, and here you do have a philosophical debate between two different stripes of Republicans, and that one is saying we need to borrow, you know, continue to borrow to spend on transportation. The other is saying we need to raise taxes to spend on transportation. What neither one of them is saying is that we just spend too darn much on transportation. We need to lower the spending. The fact is we still spend, Wisconsin spends 72% more per mile than Minnesota. 72%. We spent 33% more than the national average on transportation. The problem with the transportation budget in Wisconsin is not how we should fund it. The problem is we just spend too darn much.
You know, we're almost out of time. A quick reaction to a story in the news this morning. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin says he is preparing to seek re-election and seek the Democratic nomination for governor. And State Senator Kathleen Vinehout is taking steps to possibly run for the Democratic nomination for governor. I wish we had more time, but we don't. Lewis, what do you think of those two as possible candidates to challenge Governor Walker?
Well, you know, very qualified, but you can talk all you want. Let's see who actually declares that they're in the race, and once we do that, once we have, you know, that list, then we can start talking more seriously. But right now, I like to see that there are qualified people, you know, positioning and talking about it. But let's see who actually bites the bullet and steps forward.
Yeah, Owen, a reaction to Paul Soglin and Kathleen Vinehout, at least looking like they're going to run.
Yep, I think it would make for a highly entertaining primary. You do have, and I do think it draws the line that one of your other clips earlier was talking about the perceived divide between Madison and Milwaukee and the rest of Wisconsin. That will make it a stark debate in that Democratic primary.
Yeah. I think we'll leave it there. I wish we had more time, but we don't. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Owen Robinson, columnist with the West Bend Daily News, blogger at bootsandsabers.com, and Lewis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, former state lawmaker. Thank you to Chris Molina and to August Brown for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We hope to have more in state politics coming up in our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.